Legend Network podcast is never late, nor are they early. They arrive precisely when they're meant to. Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Extended, a Middle-earth podcast from explosionnetwork.com. Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Extended, a Middle-earth podcast. This week we're going to be talking about a movie Kieran will be happy about, because here he is. Join me, Kieran Marchant.
Yeah, it's me.
Ashley Hobley.
Hey, Dylan. Excited to be here, and I'm excited Kieran's happy for once.
We've got through 3 weeks of complaining, and we should be on the high road, up and up from now on, I believe, hopefully. So, this week, we are talking about The Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring. Synopsis of which is: a meek hobbit from the Shire and 8 companions set on a journey to destroy the powerful One Ring and save Middle-earth from the Dark Lord Sauron. Directed by Peter Jackson, written by Fran Bolz, Philip Bowens, and Peter Jackson, based on the novel, of course, by J.R.R. Tolkien. Now, Kieran, let's throw it straight to you. What was the first time you watched? This is like obviously everyone's introduction, I feel, to Lord of the Rings. Like, I didn't know when I put, like, I can straight away say that I never knew anything about Lord of the Rings until the movies came out. Like, came out when I was like my 10 or something like that.
Dad and my sister were very big Lord of the Rings.
Okay, right, already. Yeah. So no one in my family gave any shits, and I'd never heard of it. So you had heard of it when the movie came out then?
Well, I hadn't, but I had, like, when the movie trailer came out, my sister and my dad were very excited for it, and they knew all about it. I remember, yeah, as I think I mentioned last time, was going to the cinema and watching Fellowship of the Ring in the cinemas when it was first released.
How old would you have been?
Probably
came out like 2001.
2001 or 2002? So this was 7 or 8.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, 7 or 8. Probably didn't understand the movie very well. Was in love with the character called Strider, who was better than Aragorn. But no, I think I have.
Were you disappointed when he stopped showing up halfway through?
No, because I knew what he looked like. I just didn't know his name was different, you know. But no, I had I had fond memories. This was a really cool time, because this was, and though now it's shadowed by the author being a total fucking turd of a human being, this was a cool time to be, like, into movies and cinema, because, well, not even that, but, like, every year was, like, Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter. And they were just, yeah, it was just two very cool and iconic franchises that I think these really imbued my love of fantasy and love of magic and these, yeah, higher fantasy type of stories. I think this begins a very deep-seated and a love and passion for this genre. Was definitely this movie.
Ash, when was the first time you watched this?
And Ash was like 25.
Did you know anything about Lord of the Rings prior to watching this?
No, I did not know anything about Lord of the Rings, I believe. Saw it in Melbourne.
Really?
Maybe Boxing Day, the day after. Mm-hmm. So this was during a period where we go visit my grandparents over Christmas. So, yeah, my brother went to see Lord of the Rings. Melbourne when we were down there. It became kind of the yearly tradition. So I also knew nothing about Lord of the Rings, you know, it was just the big thing. It was the movie you needed to see. With the hobbits and the elves and the dwarves and the ring and Gandalf. So yeah.
I asked my dad to rent it for me when it was out on VHS, because like there was just
how many tapes was it?
It was just one tape.
It was just the one, because this wasn't an extended edition back then. No, that was a theatrical. Yeah.
It still would have been 3 hours though. That's
2:45, like, isn't it? I think is the non.
Yeah, it's not 3 hours. Yeah, I don't think the only
it's
one
178
goes,
minutes.
I say
is the original.
So that's two. And
that's just under 3 hours.
Yeah, just under.
I think the only one that actually goes over is Return of King.
Yes.
Yeah. Like theatrical, the only one that goes over.
Yeah. They had to cut all the trailers and like the Don't Steal don't pirate. Yeah.
No, I'm pretty sure that was probably all still there.
Because there's not enough room on the tape.
Well, it was also SD, so visual image wise, the data was a lot smaller. But yeah, because people at school were talking about it who had watched it, like I had friends who watched it, and you know, like, oh, so good and stuff like that. So I asked Dad to rent it for me. It was like the hot new release. And I remember watching it and being quite confused by also really loving it. You know, like that thing when you're a kid where, you know, you're like, you know, you enjoy it. Yeah. So like the standouts I remember from a kid was Strider / Aragorn is like one of the coolest characters I'd ever seen at the time. I would, to the point, and I'll point this out now, I'll get this story out of the way. So in school, you know, they would make you write these short stories and stuff like that. Every single character, Aragorn.
That's so Aragorn, fucking adorable. Aragorn. That's so
cool. Like that is the character name of every character. I stole Aragorn from this. I used to play this like online web-based game that everyone played at the time. It was called Kings of Chaos. It was like I don't know if that's ringing a bell for anyone, but everyone in my school played it, and my like username was like Aragorn, so you know, like some thing or whatever. I had it.
Do you have an Aragorn email address?
No, I did not. Sorry.
Email wasn't a thing back then.
It's in the thing. Yeah, I don't know if I had an
email. Email was a thing in 2001.
Not really. Email was not regular.
It was Aragorn, and then also stealing something from the Del Toro book series, which I combined into everything I did at the time. So, two like completely different fantasy genres that I combined into my. I just ripped off whenever I wrote short stories for school. But so it was like Aragorn's like the coolest character ever. Oh my God, I've never watched something where a character you love so much, like Gandalf, just dies. And that was like heartbreaking as a kid. Because of course, I didn't know at the time. That was like the most heartbreaking thing, which we can come back to discussing that scene. But like, they were like I think as a kid, like the two standouts, it's like Aragorn's the coolest character ever. And
dude,
Gandalf
died. The moment where Aragorn fights the Ringwraiths, when he steps over with a sword and the fucking torch, is the coolest shit ever. If you don't like, the first time you watch that, don't either instantly fall in love with that man or get super fucking hyped. You aren't alive. You aren't alive. And to think that Viggo Mortensen was possibly like the second actor to play Aragorn. They'd already filmed a bunch with the original Aragorn, and then they had to go back and fix it all because they hated him.
So Daniel Day-Lewis was originally offered the part. Nicolas Cage received an offer. Stuart Townsend was cast, but was replaced during filming because he was too young. And then Russell Crowe was also considered as a replacement. And then Daniel Day-Lewis was offered the role a second time.
They really wanted Daniel Day-Lewis.
Can you imagine?
I can't imagine anyone else. It's such like an iconic role for movies and Viggo's career that it's hard
to imagine. Vin Diesel auditioned for the role.
Yep, okay.
I am.
It's about
Strider.
Family.
It's about family.
It's about fellowship.
Oh, wow. What a fucking thing.
The fellowship keeps getting bigger every episode. Every series, the enemy from the previous movie joins the fellowship. The fucking Uruk-hai from this one joins the fellowship. Saruman's in it by the end of the movie.
Someone needs to make this like remake spin-off Fast and Furious version of Lord of the Rings. Haven't
this, yeah, it almost rides itself. Spin-off fucking everything. Oh shit.
So we did, as we have been for all the Hobbit movies, we have been watching the extended editions here. In case I've failed to mention it like previously, but I've never watched the extended editions of any of these movies in any of my so I have like watched the Lord of the Rings films a couple times over throughout my life, but I've never ever watched the extended editions. I've never had friends who cared to watch them with me, and I've never cared to watch them myself as much as I've heard that, you know, they're the be all end all things. Kieran, have you watched the extended editions before?
I watched the extended editions at least once a year for much of my adult life.
Is the extended edition your preference?
Yes. For one character and one character alone that is made, even though he's great in the original theatrical cut, he's just fucking above and beyond in this cut, especially for Fellowship of the Ring. I think
the original simp, Gimli.
I think what the extended edition does to further develop Boromir's character, especially in Fellowship, I think is absolutely amazing. Like, I think Boromir is one of my favorite characters because of the theatrical cut of this movie. The extended cut of this movie, because there's so much depth and interest to this character. I think when I was a kid, I remember hating Boromir. Because why would you do that? Why would you try and steal the ring and betray them? And you know, and it was a good thing he died trying to make things right and stuff like that. Probably not in those words, but he was a bad guy. But through this version, where you get to see more smaller moments of Boromir, his relationship with the hobbits, his relationship with Aragorn, seeing how much of a flawed human being he is, where he just wants to do good. And he just wants to do what's right for the people of Gondor and to save them, where they've had this heavy price over them for such a long time. And it leads him down a straight track, and it leads him to make a really bad decision. And not to spoil what's ahead, but there's actually more Boromir in the next two movies that we get to see because of the
what?
What?
So it's actually really
exciting.
He comes
back from the dead.
Something like that. But no. It's really exciting.
Gandalf comes up and says, hey, we're not done.
For me, the extended cuts just give more room.
Mr. Nobody comes out of nowhere. It's all a hologram.
There's more breathing room for the Fellowship. Yeah, I just absolutely adore the extended cuts of these movies.
The Ash is like killing himself over here with his fucking Fast and Furious Kurt Russell joke. What's
keep
the...
getting him.
How'd you feel on this rewatch after coming off The Hobbits?
Like, this is like night and day. This is so funny. Like, there's just, I don't know, there's something, the panning shot over the Fellowship walking through the snow over the mountains is so, I don't know what it is. There's just because you know that they filmed that for real and that was done there, and that was just never a serious feeling I got from The Hobbit. It was just this sense of journey and adventure that was happening. And just those panning shots of the Fellowship traveling is so much better. I don't know. There is just such a sense of a grand adventure going on in this movie that they just failed to capture throughout The Hobbit. The crazy thing I always think is, and I mentioned this when we first started watching it, The Hobbit is a smaller, shorter book than the Fellowship of the Ring. I think Fellowship is 545 pages, where Hobbit falls around 300 pages mark. And this movie in one movie does just a better job of encapsulating that book than The Hobbit did in three movies. And I just think overall, this, yeah, it's night and day. There's so much about this, the character interactions, the music, the overall just aesthetic and journey of this. And this is only a third of the entire adventure. And it's just so grand, so well scaled. I absolutely adore it.
Ash, how was this on the watch?
It was long, huh? It turns out you should start watching these movies early.
Time did you start watching it?
Like 8 o'clock?
Yeah, that's fine.
8:30? It's like,
well, the thing is, it's with been a the long extended day. Edition, you get to take a break. Go get some food. Go get a drink. And then change the disc over.
Yeah. No, because I got it digitally, so, you know.
Oh.
Where's the break? Where's
so
the stop for the disc?
So just before, like, when they form the Fellowship. So just before they leave Rivendell, after the meeting of the council.
It's literally after my axe, my bow, all that sort of stuff, and...
Yeah, like the big ass crescendo of the music and stuff. It actually, like, it works so well as the ending of a part. Like, it is insane how even though it just cuts to black instantly and goes, please change the disc. As a whole, it's just, you feel super hype and you want to put the next disc in straight away.
I mean, that's good.
Yeah, I was, so because I commented to Ash the other day after I watched it for this, I was like, fucking two discs? I didn't expect it because it was I got the 4K Blu-ray box set and I'm thinking, what movie's two discs these days? And I go to put it in and like I flick through I open it for the first time, like the actual box, and it's like theatrical cut, one disc, and then it's like disc one, extended cut, disc two, extended cut. I'm like, what? And then, yeah, so mine's at the end, it comes up and it's like, the journey continues on disc two. I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool sounding. other than being long, any other thoughts, Ash?
I mean, yeah, it's a great movie. It's a, it had been a long time since I've actually watched it. So, you know, certain elements were things that I don't know what's like, what was cut from the theatrical. Well, there's certain things I know that were cut from the theatrical cut, but like things like were all blending together pretty seamlessly it seems like it all was like true. It all happened. Yeah, it was cool going back. I think my first reaction was, wow, they really like did not make the opening to this seamless with the ending of the last Hobbit film.
Yeah, they did a really bad job of that. Now that
because he's only starting the book, right?
I thought this where it's like, okay, so Bilbo's writing two books. So and technically, so in this start of this movie, he is starting the Lord of the Rings. Because the start of this is concerning hobbits, which is the first book with the first chapter of the Lord of the Rings Fellowship of the Ring. So when you think
about
it,
why would he be writing the Lord of the Rings? Why would the events of Lord of the Rings have not even started?
But it's just I guess the opening chapter of concerning hobbits is very much it almost is written from Bilbo's perspective. Like you almost think of Bilbo is the narrator, because Bilbo is more Tolkien than Frodo is, because in case anybody doesn't know, the ongoing theory is Lord of the Rings / The Hobbit is a very much a self-insert story. People think that Tolkien used to deal with his experiences of going to war and the journey he went on for several years, and so yeah, for his position is often more. I think it's more compared to Bilbo than Frodo in general for it.
Yeah. So yeah, I kind of wish that it had been more seamless. Because, you know, the last Hobbit movie ends with, you know, Gandalf coming in.
Do you...
And Gandalf doesn't come in for ages.
How do you both feel about how did watching The Hobbit prior to this change your experience overall? For this movie,
so I don't care that it's not transit because that's a Hobbit movie problem, not a Lord of the Rings movie problem.
Yeah.
They made 20 years apart, well, 10 years, whatever. I don't know. As far as like watching, I haven't watched any of these movies since The Hobbit came out, so there are a lot of lines that I, as someone who'd never read the books either, that I picked up stuff in this now. You know, like be it the chainmail, whatever mithril vest thing that he gives, mm-hmm. and like the comments of getting that from Thorin, the story, the thing about the dragon, just all the little comments that either Bilbo or Gandalf make about events that happened in The Hobbit. I'm like, oh, like I know what that is now. Whereas I never picked up on those before. So that was the only thing. Otherwise, I don't think The Hobbit does anything to enhance these movies.
Yeah, it just fills in Bilbo's backstory.
My only one is it makes Gandalf look like more of a spud at the start of this movie, of just Gandalf's whole fucking discovery of the ring and going through the ring and everything, which
it could have been any magical ring.
The thing is,
my question is, why does the ring turn people invisible?
Because it transports you to another plane of existence. Technically, that is like mirrored onto.
Is that ever explained in any of them?
Not in the movies, not very well. The ring rates. Right. No, but the thing is, Gandalf in this movie, Gandalf is so surprised at any connection to Sauron, any connection to him coming back. He is so fucking surprised after you've just watched The Hobbit, where.
That was 60 years ago. You know,
it's
why is he
still
back
like
now?
He still
why
knows
why has he waited
happening?
60 extra years? Also, the other thing that threw me at the start of this is like they defeated Sauron 2 million years ago.
Yes,
that's a long time.
It is. It was all the way. It's almost the. It's what they call
like,
the Second Age.
Yeah. Like,
see, I,
it, the, it's, every, it's an unbelievable amount of time ago that people would. And yet they're living in exactly the same kind of way, you know. They're not advancing at all.
That is where I recently heard a discussion where it's like time is the worst and weakest part of a fantasy world because time makes no sense. Are you telling me, like, I literally was listening to this today. Are you telling me the best sword that was ever created like 10,000 years ago? like millions of years ago.
2 million years ago.
I don't.
This is a problem. This is not a Lord of the Rings problem. This is a fancy world problem thing that is often how fancy worlds work. So they like compare this to any other big fancy world thing that you've been watching recently. Be that Game of Thrones, be that The Witcher, I guess, like more prominent like worlds. They're all big franchises that talk about events that happened hundreds of thousands of years prior, and there's little of no difference in the world in those franchises that take place over those times. They're not really realistic compared to our real world, in which, you know, technology and these sorts of things change. But that's because they want to keep them within the fantasy universe and things. So they don't want them to invent machine guns. No.
2,500 years.
It's a shame.
Otherwise, all your complaints are, again, Hobbit movie problems. So Gandalf at the start of this, not like being clicked onto the One Ring. When they made this, they didn't know he was going to add all this stuff to the Hobbit that makes it seem dumb. So that's a Hobbit movie problem.
Yes, which is 100% a Hobbit problem. It's just it recolors Lord of the Rings and recolors this in a very weird way. The only other one that gets me every time, and I now get really sad about it because it properly clicks with me, is every time they get to Moria and understanding who owned, like, who was the one that was in charge of Moria was Balin, who is the white-haired dwarf from the Hobbit series. He was the Lord of Moria and who died and everything. It was the uncle to Gimli. And I think just having that context for me always hits a bit deeper.
So that's a context that actually still makes sense, though. Like, it doesn't... Yes. The Hobbit...
No, 100%. Yeah. That completely makes sense. And you know why that makes sense? Because that was originally in Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, not this fucking dumb shit that they added in the movies.
Yeah. Again, I still feel like they could have had that. If they wanted to introduce that, we need to get off The Hobbit. But if they want to introduce this whole tying in more Sauron stuff, The Hobbit, they just needed to write it in a way that doesn't do what we're doing now, which is when you then watch The Lord of the Rings, you're like, this doesn't actually make sense. They needed to see, like, go in, like, think Rogue One into A New Hope, like, where you're like, that's seamless. Like,
this enhances this.
Yeah, this enhances the whole experience, but this doesn't. This makes you go, wait, that doesn't, like, why Gandalf was, it's only 60 years ago, which in the scheme of things in his lifetime isn't that long ago. Like, why is he suddenly acting like this ring? Again, that's a Hobbit movie problem. But, because in the context of this movie, especially watching it prior to Hobbit, I never had any issues, and I still don't, because I just sort of treat it as its own thing. Is that he? I always just took it as, like, there's rings out there. He just thinks that Bilbo's managed to find himself a ring of power of some sort.
Yes.
Whatever. Yeah, he's just like, just use it more responsibly or whatever. And then when he thinks it's the One Ring, that's when he's like, oh, shit. But he thinks the One Ring was so lost, which is the story, like, so lost to the world that he doesn't think for a second it could be the One Ring. Like, there's no way that's not possible. So,
like, why would it turn up here in the Shire? Yeah, why would it turn up in a Hobbit's hands? Like, 100%.
Yeah. I really enjoyed this. I think going from the Hobbit into this, it's just day and night. Similar to Kieran was saying, in terms of quality and everything. Watching these on because I got the 4K box set, so not only am I watching them on 4K for the first time, last time I watched them was DVDs and not even on Blu-ray, and then watching the extended editions for the first time. I think the extended editions, at least, well, the first one I've watched, Fellowship, I think solely there's nothing here that seems like it should have still been left on the cutting room floor. Like, looking up after what was added, I'm like, that's great. Like, the movie, although long, I don't feel like there's anything in here that I would actually cut. That's the thing, like, it's extended cut, but it definitely all feels like it enhances both this film and the future ones, I guess. There are some stuff where I'm like, oh, like, it's sort of interesting because they sort of ruin, I guess, the reveal of Strider to Aragorn a little bit more in this. It's sort of like this movie, like, takes away that slower tease from the theatrical cut, because they're just like, well, you've already, like, everyone watching this has already seen the movie before. So, like, because that scene added where he's, like, at the grave or whatever, and is it Theandril or whoever comes over? I can't remember what character comes over and, like, oh, no, old mate, what's the elf dude's name? Hugo Weaving's character, whatever his
Elrond.
Name.
Oh, Elrond.
Elrond. Like, Elrond comes over and, like, tries to tell him to
go
be the king and stuff like that, which is added. Like, that's well before I remember ever, like, him being talked about.
In the theatrical cut, all of Aragorn's stuff is, you kind of discover that through his relationship and connection with Boromir.
Yeah.
And his discussions with Boromir.
Yeah. So, like, having that, and that's, like, so much earlier. So, like, I don't think it ruins the movie, but it's just, like, it definitely plays towards an audience who sort of already knows the movie the first time. So it's like, yeah, watch the theatrical cut and then watch the extended cut, because it just makes the movie better. But and then, yeah, the 4K version, I think the film looks really, really great. I looked up some comparison shots to the old ones, because I was like, I don't know, this scene looks like it's like different from my memory and stuff like that. It's just because there's been some like retoning and stuff, like, so the colors actually look a lot more natural, and some scenes don't have like this green or blue filter that I have in my memory from certain scenes that were over the top. It's Peter Jackson like retouched them. The special effects have been touched up, but not George Lucas. So that's good. So that means like
it's not like, it doesn't stand out like, as well as I'm like, I always remember the one that stands up to me is every time is the Balrog. Balrog look that good originally? And the answer is no.
No.
The Balrog looks amazing in these cuts.
Yeah. The Balrog looks really good, but also still you can tell it's special effects. Like, you can tell it's special effects. Not even in a bad way. It's like, it looks good. Like, it's been retouched enough that it looks good, but not also overdone to the point that they literally replaced it. Like, and what, it still looks comparable. Like, it's hard to say. It's like comparing a remake to a remaster. It's like, it's a remaster and a good one at that. So not, but yeah, so I really enjoyed all of that. But yeah, like, just comparing the music, the epicness of the score is like one of the best.
I love, like, there's beats. Like, I always, even when I haven't watched Lord of the Rings in a very long time, I always randomly hum the Shire's theme. But a piece of music that has never stood out to me before, and maybe it's because I'm just listening with a soundbar and, like, well, kind of, and the 4K audio design. But the Balrog, like, before the Balrog, that music goes hard. Like, when they're, like, trying to jump over the gap with the, and they're getting fired at by the goblins, and, like, the build-up with the chanting and stuff, I'm like, this shit's awesome. Like, this is, I've never connected with that piece of music before until watching this time, and I couldn't help but just being blown away by it, to be perfectly honest with you.
Yeah. Shit is hot.
There were, like, certain segments where I was like, this sounds like something I've seen in something else. You know? I feel like a lot of things are pulled from this score to use in their movies. You know,
probably have.
Like, obviously that epic, like, the build-up sounds, you know.
What was I going to say? I forgot now. Something. I don't know. The other thing is that, in comparison, again, like, coming off The Hobbit, the core cast, I feel like I know all the characters a lot better. They're a lot more enjoyable to spend time with. I don't feel like I don't know anyone. They all get a little bit more. The only character, like, you could be like, oh, Gimli gets, like, the least time, but even he gets, like, that moment in the cave, like, to see him, like, break down and cry and, like, all that sort of stuff. So,
is Gimli even introduced? Like, you know?
Yeah.
Like, this is Gimli or whatever.
I think he is during the council scene.
Yeah, they introduce him, but, like, that's it. It's just like there.
But Gimli is
always... Of course we know who Legolas is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think his spot is very much more of maybe a slightly comedic role and very stereotypical for being a dwarf. Moria kind of brings that out of him a lot with his pigheadedness and his stubbornness and just that whole interaction with Gandalf and being like, why the fuck aren't we just going to the Mines of Moria? Like, our cousins will celebrate us and give us a explanation, and you can just
apparently
know
that's the change from the books, right?
Pardon?
That's the change from the books. The Moria section.
Not like, that I can remember.
Well, according to Wikipedia, it is. Apparently, Gandalf was in favor of going to Moria in the books. Apparently.
Oh, okay. I did not know that part. Also, I cannot remember Pippin and Gandalf's relationship. With being so much of just
Gandalf's like consistently like you're fuck you, fucking Pippin, idiot. You piece of shit,
100%. It is quiet moment during the Fellowship. Fuck off, Pippin! Yeah. Like,
he'll
just
literally,
like,
be sitting in the car talking to Frodo, like smoking a pipe, be like, "Oh, life, Frodo, my sweet young boy, Pippin, you fucking cunt!" Like,
And I'm sat there going, I can't remember this being this harsh towards Pippin. Like, Pippin is just the whipping boy of this entire fucking movie.
I think it was the moment where, like, he's like trying to bring the door, like open the door or whatever, and he says something. He's like, if I wanted something from you, you dumb one, I'd fall. Like, shut up. I was like, whoa, Gandalf. Need to chillax.
Well, he did knock that skeleton.
I mean, yeah, he deserved to get in trouble for that.
He should have.
So he totally brought... He really, it's his fault, the Gandalf said. What do you think about it?
It's true. Karen, what's your favorite scene, moment, sequence from this film?
Fuck, that's a hard one. It's just so hard, which is funny, because this is so the polar opposite of The Hobbit, because I'm like, The Hobbit, I'm just like... I don't fucking know. There was good scenes during this where this is just from start to finish. I'm just in love. It is a tie between either Aragorn fighting the Ringwraiths, or Boromir's death scene. I think is the two top ones for me, because I think for me, this is the best Sean Bean death in the history of Sean Bean deaths. Man likes to die in movies, and this is, like, the number one. This is my favorite. I just think, yeah, I think both are iconic and both do so much for this movie and so much for the Lord of the Rings going forward.
Ash, do you ever?
Yeah, I would agree the Boromir death would be pretty high there, and Aragorn, like, taking out that old gummy bath to, you know. but also, you know, Sam going into the river, can't swim. He's always going to be there. Always going to be there, Mr. Frodo.
Fucking idiot.
I promise Gandalf.
I would say mine, yes, also, for the sake of picking something different, I won't say the Boromir death, because that was, like, as a kid, that was the scene, like, the most epic shit ever, like, him taking all those arrows and still fighting. Mm-hmm. I was like, what a fucking badass. Then Aragorn comes in and kicks ass. So I would say runner-up has to be, come on, no one said it, Gandalf. You shall not pass. Like, come on, it's the line.
It's, yeah, that's true.
The moment, it's true.
I mean, the other lines, I'm not a conjurer of cheap tricks.
Yeah.
Well, no. My favorite Gandalf line, and it's just because
run, you fools.
No. Oh. It's just, and it's such a random small line. But it is Ian McKellen whispering, "Keep it secret, keep it safe." That I have to say it every fucking time. Like, it is. I don't know what it is. It's just something about that line that gives me goosebumps every fucking time, because it's like, oh shit, here we go again.
I think Ian McKellen is so good in this movie. Like,
oh my god,
like,
he's amazing.
So, like, he's bad in The Hobbit. Like, he's one of the, like, standouts, of course. But watching this, there was a sequence, and it was at some point when they're walking through the caves around the point where he's, like, talking to about Gollum and stuff. At some point, my brain literally goes, "Fuck, Ian McKellen's good in this movie." Like, it was like my brain had to say it to myself for some reason.
there's so much to it that you're just like. Like, it's just, considering he is only in half to three quarters of this movie.
I mean, he does get captured, like, straight away.
Hey, but that's because he thinks Sauron's his buddy. Actually, yeah, also, can I say, Saruman versus...
Saruman turned real quick.
He turned heel. Saruman versus Gandalf, the fight in this one is so much better than the fight in the theatrical cut. Because I think the fight in the theatrical cut is just Gandalf getting his ass handed to him. I think it's just Gandalf gets, like, thrown up against the wall and then spun across the floor.
Yeah.
There's a lot more back That's and forth into this one. There's a lot more Gandalf having to go back at Saruman, and that I really enjoy that whole scene a lot more in this version, comparing it to what was originally released.
Before I forget, also just something about the 4K release that I picked up on that helps here. Is that the scene like where Gandalf's strapped on, like, stuck on top of the tower, being able to see, you can see in small detail all those trees being pulled down around him and stuff like that, that I definitely have never noticed before. It's just like a small detail. And it's kind of sad to watch, actually, that he's destroying this entire forest.
Especially when you...
Which he does again in the next movie, I guess, but...
The scene of Gandalf walking through Isengard with Saruman before he turns.
Yeah, it's like a very beautiful place. And
is a very beautiful place. It's so green. Yeah. It's so green and beautiful, and you don't see that originally. And then to see how quickly it turns into this barren death place that is just filled with just machines of war and soldiers is just, yeah, it's really shows the length that Saruman is willing to go and does go.
Another thing, and I know I point this out already, I keep hoping to bring up the Hobbit, but it's because we talked about, like, I don't like the design of, I don't like the way the orcs look at all in that film. Finally getting into this and having these scary looking motherfuckers, these badass scary dudes, just love the design of them so much. And then coming off, like, as of the time of recording, it was only like a week or two ago that the whole reason we're doing this podcast is, of course, because you've got the Amazon Prime Video TV series coming up. That's the reason we're doing this. They had those pictures come out of the orcs and stuff, and like seeing those and being like, they look exactly like how I remember them. And then watching this and being like, they do look exactly how, well, at least based off those screenshots.
Yes.
I'm like, yes, thumbs up at least so far for the orcs and that. So that's yeah, really good to see. Promising. I'm really enjoying it.
We're not even at the best orcs yet. The best orcs are in Two Towers. Like, all the orcs in Two Towers are fucking insane. Like, there's just the whole orc and Merry and Pippin scenes are just fantastic to film. So I'm excited.
Fucking Merry and Pippin, am I right?
No, just fucking Pippin. Mary's just there along the right. It's just fucking Pippin. Pippin is at fault. It's a random thought though I had. Can you imagine if you were the fifth friend? If you were the unnamed fifth friend, one night sat at the Green Dragon having your drink, and your mates Mary, Pippin, Frodo, and Sam just don't rock up. They just don't, because Sam and Frodo went off an adventure and randomly, and you were supposed to go to the farm with Merry and Pippin. You were supposed to go there and you slept in. You fucking slept in that day, and all because of that, you didn't go on this adventure. You know, even though it's a non-canon character and not something that probably exists, I just had that thought this time watching. I was like, that's hilarious.
I mean, I'm sure he's happy because hobbits don't like adventure, right?
That's true.
That's the whole thing.
One thing,
like,
I
peace and calm.
True, but he's going to get FOMO. His mates have gone, you know?
Not everybody gets FOMO.
Talking about, like, that drinking scene. I don't recall that. Well, maybe it's extended in this cut or something. Well, I just don't remember that much of the drinking scene being in the theatrical cut. And I definitely don't remember them, like, doing this whole, like, Sam setting up his future wife. I don't remember that being in the theatrical cut.
It's actually a lot better in this one, because in the original, the only moment you get of Sam and his love interest is him pining at her across the room while she's dancing.
Okay.
And Frodo kind of making a little bit of fun at him.
And then you have that moment when they're walking out of the building and, like, talking and then whatever. Like, Frodo says something about her something, which I don't remember at all. So, well, not seeing that before. So that was good. Because, yeah, I think, like, I remember watching the originals, and as a kid, I definitely don't remember them pining at one another. By the time I got around and Return of the King came out, and they're suddenly like, oh, we get married and stuff like that. And it's like, oh, I'm like, what? I'm like, who the fuck is this girl? Where'd she come from? I about to ask Ash, but no, I did my favorite scene. We're done on that. It's fine.
Yeah.
Kieran, anything else you want to talk
I've
about?
I've got two more quick points. One, and I don't know if this is as I've got older, or maybe it's just because I'm more aware of Lord of the Rings and I've watched more kind of directors behind the scenes commentary and stuff like that. But the scenes where they have to use a size double for the hobbits become more and more obvious every time I watch. And, like, you can begin to see more and more of the masks that they wear to cover over their faces and stuff.
I think that's also another downside of the 4K release, is that you will spot that stuff more so than you were watching it on, like, previous, like, DVD, grainy, VHS, or, yeah, like, whatever else.
And the other one, Arwen in this book movie is given a lot more of a substantial role to play throughout it. The Arwen's flight from the Ringwraith into her summoning the water of the canals to banish them that is an addition into this and wasn't a part of Lord of the Rings. And I find that really interesting when you compare that to Toriel from The Hobbit, which was a created character we kind of failed to connect with because it was like she was made just for a love interest. I feel like Arwen is given
she
more...
She should have summoned, like, water horses.
Water horses, man.
So, hold on, pause, because as I've said a million times, I haven't read the Lord of the Rings books. So, is she a character at all in the books?
Yes, she is in Lord of the Rings.
She's, so, she's still the love interest for Aragorn. Okay.
She's still in love interest, but Peter Jackson and the team, and I think this was partly because it was Liv Tyler, but they wanted to bring her more into the forefront of the story in Fellowship and gave her this more heroine role to play to save Frodo and have a, more of a part to play in it compared to it, which I think is, you know, this is how you do it, how you do influence positive female characters in your stories without having to make one up to for a love interest for a weird love triangle.
Thank God. This movie is so good that I know exactly what's going to happen, but when she's like that chase sequence, I'm like edge of my seat, right? Yep. And plus, like, pair that the Gandalf scene. I know exactly what's going to happen. I'm still edge of my seat. I know what's going to happen. There's these two scenes in this movie. I'm like, oh girl, like, you know, like, so, like, yeah, I can't imagine a movie about that scene because, yeah, again, as a kid, I remember like that scene was like so scary. Her being chased by the ringwraiths and stuff like that.
The ringwraiths are fucking ringwraiths. I think were the things that gave me nightmares though in this movie. I think orcs were fine, but the ringwraiths were
that's scary.
But it was because of this movie and just before the ring race that I learned about elevensies. And that whole breakfast is, quotable stuff.
I was going to say, that's the line, if I was to pick a line that I actually quote quite a lot from this movie in my day-to-day life without even having to think about it, well, not day-to-day, like just like semi-often, is the breakfast line.
Yeah.
What about second breakfast?
Like, I'll be like that, or like, say half, like, morning say tea? I want, or even if I want more, yeah, say it's like lunch or something. It's like, I'm like, I'm still hungry. It's like, well, there's no more food. I'm like, oh, what about second lunch or elevensies? Or, you know, like, I just start throwing out random. Like, I'll do that without even thinking, like, to parents, grandmothers, like, stuff like that. They don't know what I'm talking about, but it's just ingrained in my head. Like,
there's just, I think for me, like, I've watched this movie so many times that there is large parts of it I could just say off rip and talk through it and talk over and kind of do the voices parts. And, you know, I think if it's between breakfast, me randomly humming the Shire scene, and anybody who ever tells me I'm late to something, it's always a wizard always arrives exactly when they're supposed to. Never late, never early. It's always a favorite of mine. I really do enjoy, especially that bit where, you know, even if you're not given any information about Frodo and Gandalf before that moment, you can instantly, from that small interaction, you know that there is a friendship and a bond there of time that it quickly grows. And that's the interesting thing about Lord of the Rings and this movie is that once again the extended edition adds the entrance point much longer where there is a lot more information kind of front loaded into the movie. Whereas I think quite quickly we just kind of bounce it. And I think the Bilbo stuff is added in the extended edition. I think mostly, especially the talking about all the hobbits and going through different bits and pieces about the hobbits. And it kind of just goes into from like the opening setup, it goes straight into Frodo and Gandalf scene. And I love how it starts so small and so insular to the Shire and to these few characters, and it just steadily expands at a rate that you never feel is too quick. It expands and it adds a couple more and adds a couple more and adds some more characters. And that's where The Hobbit does itself no favors, because you never learn majority of the 13 dwarfs, because they're all interested at the same time and they're not given any time to breathe on screen. They're never given any time to flesh themselves out into individual characters. Whereas Lord of the Rings, you get, okay, here's Frodo, here's Gandalf, here's Bilbo, Sam, and Merry and Pippin, and now we get the Ringwraiths and Sauron and Saruman, and then you get the rest of the Fellowship added on one by one. And it's just, I think this movie is just phenomenal in storytelling. This is how you look at a book and you go transfer a book into a screenplay and you reenact and tell that book. Unlike The Hobbit, where they were like, man, if we look at this book, we could just bolt on a bunch of shit to this and get through it. No, this is masterful, and I'm so excited to watch the next two movies.
Yeah. It's funny you say that, because the intro I'd written for this podcast, which I said I will record separately and like just tag on at the start, like as the music fades in, which of course as we're recording none of you heard, but the intro is actually written as an Explosion Network podcast is never late nor are they early, they arrive precisely when they meant to. So yeah, people would have heard that three times, four times by the time they're listening to this already. But that is the line I got written.
That's pretty funny.
Ashton, do you have anything you want to shout out for this movie?
Again, you know, Gimli in this extended cut, like, what in Galadriel's hair? What a freak.
It's so good. Well, no, because there is a...
That's all added.
Explain it in there.
Yeah.
What was that?
That's all new. That whole, like, here's the gift that everyone's seen.
It's based on a... There is a legend, a dwarven legend with an elf, where it's the same thing, where the dwarf asks for three hairs from the elf's... Or two hairs from the elf's head.
Yeah. Wasn't it? He's like, I asked for one, and she gave me three.
Dude, do be simple. Like, you know my favorite thing about...
You should ask for the bathwater, I mean. That's what he really wants.
It's always a minor thing, and it goes back to how well they shot this movie in terms of...
that's the crazy thing, like, that they managed to pull this off in 2001.
Hey, like, 2001, but they pulled all three off at the same time. They shot them all back-to-back.
So technically, I guess it was like probably 1999?
Yeah. Like, it was... They shot it all together and then cut it up and released it in 3 years. They did reshoots. This is before the age of feeling like they needlessly need to split movies up more. I think if you released Return of the King now, Return of the King would be two movies. Mm-hmm. At the very least. Like,
maybe it could be. It's like we're going to watch the extended cut in 2 weeks, and it's like 4 hours. So that's the length of two movies.
100%. But no, my favorite thing about Gimli is still the fact that the actor is 7 feet tall. Yeah, the actual actor is 7 foot tall.
Oh my God.
Like, he's huge. And he had to play a dwarf, and just all of the... And that, and if you haven't already, like, if people listening to this haven't looked into it, look into the theatrics around, like, the practical theatrics around the set design that they had to take. Like, the shot of Frodo and Gandalf sitting on the same cart, and how the cart's actually designed to make Frodo look smaller than Gandalf. All that kind of stuff is so ingenious and so interesting, and I think... Definitely, if you haven't already, people should 100% go and have a look for that information, because it's fascinating, and it's just movies aren't made like this anymore.
I think that the size difference between so many characters is done so well that most people wouldn't even give it the praise it sort of needs. Like, it's like that thing about...
too seamless.
Yeah, it's that thing about, like, really good special effects is something you won't even notice, you know, like, you don't even really think about it, you're just... It's just the characters, you know, which is good because you don't want the audience actually thinking about how good it is really, unless you're doing a rewatch like we are now. But you're sitting in the cinema watching something like this for the first time. You don't want people thinking like, oh, they've done a good job. You just want to like the brain to accept that.
Yeah. The characters. You don't want to have to question how the fuck the Hobbiton and Bag End is so big for Bilbo, but is so small for Gandalf.
Mm.
Like, you don't want to have to, you don't want to be taken out of the moment to think about that, but that's the case. Is that there are, it's just the way it's shot and the way it's formed is, it's always really fun.
All right.
Also, the foreshadowing of Gollum, like, through this.
Oh, it's so fucking good.
I mean, there is, again, a little contradiction to The Hobbit, you know, of Bilbo finding the ring in this recollection.
Yes.
Where in the movie he finds it before he comes across Gollum. In this, he finds the ring after Gollum has clearly lost it.
Yes.
And realizes he's lost it.
Whatever.
Which is, then again, it's like, dude, they haven't paid more attention to... Well, they've kind of made that
It doesn't really matter that much, but it was just something that kind of irked me. But foreshadowing the Gollum, bringing him up constantly, and like just seeing glimpses of him screaming...
Baggins!
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting actual Gollum Because, yeah, also, I kind of forgot we don't get him actually properly in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Until the second.
Always in the background.
Also,
sort of
super minor point. Bilbo's face when he tries to steal the ring back is fucking horrifying every time.
Yeah. It's like that old video that used to go around with the people did the troll like scary character. It's like the car driving across the cliff and then like the big scary face pops up.
But Galadriel doesn't look fantastic either, I don't think.
No, not really.
It's very stylized, but...
It's fine. All right. That'll do it. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Lord of the Rings Extended Middle-Earth Podcast.